Thank you. I now call to order the December 18th, 2017 open session of the Pacifica National Board. It's 8:40 p.m. Eastern Time. Mr. Secretary, please take roll.
Okay. Chris Allen?
Here.
Chris, Sir Jonathan? Alexander?
Here.
Okay. David Beaton? Okay. Jim Brown? Okay. Adriana Kesanev? Bill Crozier?
Here.
Crozier's here. Catherine Davis?
Here.
Davis is here. Benito Diaz? Wanda Garner? Jan Goodman?
Here.
Goodman is here. Sabina Jacobs?
Here.
Jacobs is here. Kendall Foote? Okay. Robert Mark?
Here.
Mark is here. Shereen Roberts? Mansoor Sabah?
Hazar.
Mansoor is here. T.M. Scruggs? Okay, Nancy Soden. Okay, Alex Steinberg.
Where is it?
Steinberg is here. Tanaka is here. Kemba Spanda. Kemba. Who's on? Andrea Turner.
Present.
Andrea is here. All right. Mosquera. Washington? All right. So at the moment, we had 11 because 10 was on, then he dropped off.
That's not quorum.
He hit 10
miles, sir. He's still off.
Okay.
Well, yeah, I have a bad phone. I may have to call up again and again, but I'm here. 10 miles, sir.
Okay. Okay, so there are 12 people.
Very much. I'm going to identify my timekeepers for items and people.
I'll do the 90 seconds.
And I'll do the item again. Okay.
All right, thank you. Are there any excused absences this evening?
Not that we saw, no.
Okay. Which puts us on agenda approval, item number 2 at 5 minutes. Okay, that's item number 2, 5 minutes, agenda approval. Are there any changes, are there any objections to the agenda as is, or amendments?
I do, Mr. Chair, Ms. Sabrina.
Okay, one second. Mr. Secretary, I see it looks like Mr. Shabanda is back with us as well.
Yes, I see that. Hi, Timba.
And Jan Goodman for the staff for the changes to the agenda.
Okay, Sabrina and Jan.
I'd like to put a motion forward to amend the agenda to move item number 6 to number 4 right after the minutes. I think that's what I'm looking at. Hold on, let me look at this.
Item number 6 is consultation with consultants, and you say I put it after number 4?
No, I'll put it before number, after number 3. Put it after number 3.
Okay. So are there any objections to changing item number 6 to item number 3? And then I will assume everything just moves down. Are there any objections?
Give us a chance to look up. I'd like to look at what that is before I register anything.
Sure, I can read it for folks who haven't got it in front of them. Two is agenda approval, 3 is minutes approval, 4 is notice of new election for chair of PNB. Each of those items is 5 minutes. Item number 5, also at 5 minutes, is the motion for ED hiring authorization. And then item number 6 is the one that she wants to move. It's consultation with consultants, and there's 90 minutes allotted for that. And the lawyers, I'm told, will be on the line at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And so Sabrina wants to move item number 6 just after item number 3. So would there be any objections to that?
Chair, I have no objection.
Okay.
Chair?
Yes.
I should do all the, since when the consultants come along, as things will move directly to that, we can do all the other things in the meantime if we can.
Right. Chances are it'll end up exactly that way anyway, because it's 15 minutes on paper.
Request for information, Bill.
Sure. Bill?
You're still having this after minutes approval, right? Minutes approval will be right after agenda. Is that right?
Yeah, that's what I remember.
Between three and four.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Okay, so I hear no objections to that. And then Jen Goodman has an amendment or something.
I'd like to make an amendment to put the election of new chair to the end of the agenda, please.
Which would
that's what I just said, Jen.
Those would have moved down, Sabrina. It would have been at 5 because we still have item number 5.
Okay.
I think the way that would turn out is item consultation with consultants would move to after minutes approval or as soon as they get on the line. Item number 4, which is election for new chair, would be moved down after the hiring authorization motion. Correct, Jen?
Correct.
Thank you.
Okay. Are there any objections to that? Okay, hearing no objections.
Are we on the
Pardon
screen,
me?
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, we're on the screen, live and streaming. I'm just going to ask again, are there any objections to that change in the agenda? I'm going to read it out just to make sure that we're not confused. After minutes approval 3 would be after the consultation if they're ready to go, and then then the ED hiring authorization, and then election for chair, and then adjournment. Seems like I made a mistake. I don't think I'm listening now. But you have
adjourned the closed session.
Right. Adjourned the closed session. So, no objections, people? Okay. I hear no objections, and I think we have one of the guests coming on the line.
No, yeah.
Is guest on the line?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
No, I think it was TN or something.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that.
Had a hard time getting off.
Are we?
So minutes approval.
Okay. So, means that the agenda has been approved. And now we're on 3, minutes approval.
Mr. Chair.
After you sent out the minutes earlier today or yesterday, I believe, everyone can take a look. And if there are any objections or corrections to the minutes, please let me know. So quiet. Okay, so just to verify once more, there are no objections to the minutes of 12, 14, 17. Okay, sounds like the minutes have been approved. You got that, Aki?
Yes,
I think this is the first time. And moving right along, we are on item number, this puts us at 5. We would be on the consultation if one of them were on the line, but it's not. So I guess we'll go to item number 5.
Right. Okay. That's Alex Steinberg.
Okay, and it's just 5 minutes. Mr. Steinberg?
Okay, it's time for my motion.
Yes.
Okay. Let me read the motion. The PNB authorizes the personnel committee
to conduct a search for executive director and to present its recommendations for final approval before the entire PNB. This authorization shall apply retroactively to all deliberations of the personnel committee that were conducted in 2017. The purpose of the motion is simply to recognize that the PNB has actually been doing this work. It's kind of a formality because we have been doing this work. There's no purpose to a personnel committee unless it is actually either conducting a search or getting involved in some personnel issue. We can provide an account of the work we have done and how we came to the recommendations.
Hey, Alex, who has the noise in the background?
Could you mute your phones, please? I'm sorry, Alex.
Yeah. Okay. Well, whoever is doing it, maybe not, is not hearing. Anyway, so that's the purpose of the motion. I hope it will be approved. The personnel committee has been working diligently and trying to come up with a permanent executive director, and we have some ideas about that we wish to present in the closed session.
I second that motion. Mansoor seconds it.
Okay. Does anyone wish to speak against the motion?
Point of information, I have a question. Okay, whoever's mute. I have a question. So, Mr. Chair, can you ask Director Steinberg when they're looking at having all of this completed as far as the search? Do they already have someone in mind?
Ms. Steinberg, if you could give us info on the timeline.
We actually have completed our search, but we can discuss that in more detail in the closed session.
What's the timeline for this? So you've already got someone in mind. So what is the timeline?
We are prepared to recommend to the full board someone who, without getting into details, someone who can step in right away to serve on an interim basis while his firm does a search for a permanent ED.
Okay. So that would be immediately then?
Well,
correct?
In a relative sense, there's still paperwork to do and references to check and things like that. But, yeah, more or less very soon.
Okay. I have one more point of information, Mr. Chair.
Okay, what's your question?
Since all of the monies that are paid to our executive staff is public knowledge, how are we supposed to be paying for this person when we don't have enough people in our national office to do the audits, get the audits done, which is pretty high on the priority list, and things of that nature?
I think that's something we could discuss in the closed session.
Mr. Chair, I'd like for you to rule on that. I'd like to discuss it more.
If he doesn't want to answer it in open session, I can't make him answer.
I want Pam Goodman for the staff to answer the question. All right.
Okay, go ahead, Jan.
One of the reasons for having a person come in right now is somebody who has the ability to help change our
information,
cash flow.
Mr. Chair, point of personal privilege. I'm not asking why. I'm asking how we're going to.
No. How? By improving our cash flow situation immediately. And we can talk. I mean, one of the things to do would be to talk to this candidate as we're interviewing him to discuss that in more detail. But that's you know, but that is definitely an important question. And it's a question that in the course of the executive session, but I could start listing ways of changing the cash flow that he suggested, but that's the basic idea.
With my understanding, point from a personal point of information, again, I got another question, Mr. Chair.
Yes. And then we're going to, I guess nobody else has questions, but go ahead, Sabrina.
But this is money that are going to have to be paid to him immediately. So where is that supposed to be coming from? I mean, we're talking in short order here. We're talking in a short period of time. So where is that going to
come
from?
Well, I'm the same place that the money to pay $175,000 or $150,000 to a bankruptcy attorney, that would be the same, you know, same general pot of cash. But more importantly, there are ways of getting cash flow. $10,000 would be, or $20,000 would be what the initial amount would be approximately necessary. But I think that, you know, more details than that, I think we really need to go into closed session about. Yeah.
Okay, and we're out of time on this item, and also I see one of our guests has joined us. So it would seem that we need to go to a quick vote on this. Yes, vote. I'm sorry, I lost the motion.
Can we take it to the closed session?
Well, this motion was an open session motion. I mean, we can pause it until we're done. We don't have to vote on it now. Somebody, you know, brings up a motion to delay it or table it until after the consultation, I would leave that to the maker of the motion if he wanted to have it.
Well,
either way, we have to make a decision.
Mr. Chair, we're not screening.
Why don't you just ask it? Why don't you just ask if there are any objections to the motion?
Okay, I can. I got my hands full here. I'm sorry. Could you repeat that, Alex, please?
Why don't you just ask if there are any objections to the motion?
Thank you.
Are there any objections? Very quickly.
Are there any objections to this motion?
Yeah.
Okay. Again, are there any to Alex's motion here?
Simple object.
Okay, Mr. Shimanda, you object, which would make us go to a vote, Mr. Steinberg. We can.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
We'll vote on this motion. Grace, on?
Yes.
Grace is yes. All right. Bill Closure?
Abstain.
Okay, Bill Closure abstain. Catherine Davis?
Yes.
Okay, Davis is yes. All right, Ron DeGarda? Is that on? All right, Jan Goodman?
Yes.
Goodman is yes. Sabrina Jacobs?
Sabrina Jacobs?
Could somebody
mute your telephone?
Yeah, Ken Loeffler?
Please mute your telephone.
Ken Loeffler is yes, all right. Robert Mark?
Yeah.
Robert? Okay, Robert passes. Okay. Mansoor Sabah?
I'll pass.
Okay, Mansoor pass. All right. TM Scruggs?
Abstain.
Okay, TM abstain.
Hold on a second.
Okay, Nancy Sullivan? Alex Steinberg?
Yes.
Alex is yes. All right. Kemba Shibanda?
No.
Kemba is no, okay. Andrea Turner?
Abstain.
Okay, Andrea abstains. Okay, let me go back. Jonathan Alexander? Jonathan?
Pass.
We can't. We're going the second time around, Joe.
It's fine. Yes.
Okay, you go to yes, all right. David Beaton? Is that on? Jim Brown? Is that on? Adriana Castanet? No. Bill Kozier, you abstain? All right. Jennifer Diaz? Hello. All right, you abstain. Robert Mark, you pass?
Yes.
Okay. Robert Mark, yes. Serene Roberts? Hello. Mansour Shabbat, you pass?
Yes.
Okay, Mansour, yes. Tian has Ness, you saw them? Hello. All right, Tanaka is yes. Andrea Turner, yes. Okay, Mosquito? All right, so I have 9 yes, 1 no, and 4 abstentions.
Mr. Secretary, I'd like to change my vote to no, and for the record, because there's lack of information. None of
okay.
Information authorized. Thank
that
you.
That is not authorized, Secretary.
It doesn't matter.
No.
I'm going to
change my vote. Yeah.
What's that?
This is Andrea. No.
Yeah. Okay, Andrea is...
Yeah, until we discuss it more. Okay.
Okay, all right. So 3 no.
I can't discuss it.
All right.
Hang on. Just, Aki, restate the tally, please.
9 yes, 3 no, and 2 abstentions.
9 yes, 3 no, and 2 abstentions. Okay, that motion passes, and we are, it is 6 o'clock, it's our time certain for as well, it appears that they are all on the line. Is that correct, Aki?
Yes, all 3 guests are on the line, yes. Uh-huh.
Okay. First of all, let me thank our guest for being with us. I believe we have Phil Strzok, Reno Fernandez, and Mark Hand, if I'm not mistaken. And
it's 4 green, right?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, sorry. Okay. at any rate, the purpose of tonight's meeting was because we were on a motion, and that motion was delayed until this meeting because we wanted to get more information from attorneys. And that's what this meeting is for, and that's where we are. I'm going to let you guys decide which of you would like to go first. One thing is that we did send a bunch of the questions in writing, so if you could start with your opening statements and then address the questions you have there. And then afterwards, if members of the board want to ask questions, we'll go ahead and take a stack. But it'll probably be a lot more efficient if you start with the questions that you've already answered there in writing for us. So who would like
to
begin?
This is Reno Fernandez. I'd like to suggest that I go first, even though I'd prefer to go last, but because I have a short time frame.
Okay, Reno. Thank you.
Understandable.
All right.
Hey, go ahead, Mr. Fernandez, and thank you for joining us.
Ow. Thank you for having me, and good evening. I'll dispense with introductions unless any of you want to hear more about me and my firm. And dive right into the thing that frames your discussion. What are your fiduciary duties? Fiduciary duties of directors when a corporation is insolvent are to avoid diverting, dissipating, or unduly risking corporate assets. And those fiduciary duties run to creditors. The fiduciary duties change. You have special fiduciary duties to creditors at that point. And this applies to nonprofit corporations as well as for-profit corporations. Avoiding dissipating, diverting, or unduly risking corporate assets is a mouthful. What that looks like in practice is you are not supposed to make a situation worse. Directors may be personally liable to the degree that they make the situation worse, meaning drive the entity further into debt or allow additional debt to accrue. One of the ways to discharge your fiduciary duties is to initiate one of several kinds of insolvency proceeding. We've discussed at length with the executive director and others, and by the way, I consulted for Pacifica a couple of years ago. I was invited to come in and talk about some of these issues. So I don't think it would be efficient for us to go down the route of all the different options. Chapter 11 reorganization would be the best fit if you're going to initiate any kind of insolvency proceeding. Why and when would you do that? How does that dovetail with your fiduciary duties? I want to make sure to make something clear from the emails that we were exchanging today. I don't want this point to get lost. Phil pointed out that this may be a solvent estate on a balance sheet sense. The assets exceed the liabilities. The entity is insolvent as a cash flow matter. There are two different definitions of insolvency. So those modified fiduciary duties do apply in California. But you are balance sheet solvent, maybe. That presents an interesting challenge. You remember, you probably heard talk about a 90-day window to avoid preferences. Well, two things about that. One is, as Phil pointed out, one of the elements of a preference action is that the creditor must receive less than the creditor would have in a hypothetical Chapter 7. Well, in a solvent estate, that's 100%. That gets rid of your opportunity to undo Empire State obtaining a judgment lien. 90 days or no 90 days, that would kill it. The other issue is you don't really want to rely on a preference action. It's not automatic, it's not cheap, and it's not a sure thing. It's a lawsuit that you have to bring against the creditor. I think there is a creative argument for arguing that Empire State should have a capped claim where under Bankruptcy Code Section 502b6, Empire State should not have a 100% claim in bankruptcy. It should be capped like a landlord, in which case you might have a leg up in a partial preference action, even if it is a solvent estate. But that's very creative. It's very much untested. Although the issue of the scope of the 502b6 cap, I'm fresh off the heels of arguing that before the Ninth Circuit, and there's a published case on that now. I prevailed on appeal, prevailed at oral argument, and we have a published case on that. I think I've circulated to management for your pleasure reading. Some of that applies. My associate and I have taken a look at the lease and how the lease is structured between the rent, but also license fees. And we think there's a fighting chance that those license fees can be recharacterized as rent or rent-like payment pursuant to 502b6. The scope is broader than rent. So those are big picture issues. A written question came in between the last larger round of questions and now, essentially asking what is the best way to fulfill your fiduciary duties, try to get a loan, try to complete your audit or prepare for bankruptcy. I don't think you should be thinking of these as a mutually exclusive choice, but as a continuum. Your lender may be available in bankruptcy to provide what's called BIP financing, debtor in possession financing, and may be better protected by doing that because under Bankruptcy Code Section 364, a lender, the courts recognize that a lender who comes in during an insolvency situation is taking a special risk and is entitled to special protection. That being said, if the lender makes a loan before bankruptcy and we go into Chapter 11, it's not going to be the end of the world. I think you should think of obtaining a loan as a continuum. If you do obtain financing and have to go into Chapter 11, it's problematic because it indicates you didn't really have a plan to pay to service the debt, which is problematic. But I think you would, instead of treating this lender as in the dark, outside, maybe going to be a creditor in Chapter 11, bring the lender in closer to the vest and talk about a more holistic strategy. You know you're going to have to reorganize in or out of court, so you might as well get some support from a lender who's going to help you do that. I know I didn't go through every single written question that was posed to me today, but I'd like to just focus on those big points and stop talking and start listening.
Okay. If anyone has any questions for Mr. Fernandez, you can answer right now.
Can we go to the other question?
Sabrina from Stagg.
Oh, right. I'm sorry. Yeah, it would be better to let's just, because otherwise we'll lose time. We're going to go on to our next guest. because otherwise we're going to get bogged down in roundabout questions. Who is next?
This is Phil Strzok. I'll jump in if that's okay.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Strzok. You have the floor.
Yes, and I've addressed the board before a couple months ago. And
increase the volume.
Things were a little different. Things were a little different at that point in time. The landscape was a little different, and things weren't as dire as they are now. Many of the hypotheticals we discussed have become a reality. Empire State has obtained a judgment, and they're taking steps now to posture themselves to be able to collect on their judgment, enforce that judgment against various assets of the estate. They've taken steps to register in their judgment in California and to Texas. And what does that all mean? It means that at this point in time, the assets of Pacifica are at risk. Imminently or very shortly down the road, there's a problem. And all we have right now from Empire State is kind of a, I guess you would say, a promise that they're not going to enforce their judgments, or if they do, they're going to let us know a little bit in advance. I'm not sure that that's sufficient for the board to rely on that at this point in time. If they're able to exercise some of their rights, that would be catastrophic for the business. Bank accounts would be levied upon, and potentially down the road we could lose other assets as well. So the board is in a real predicament right now and faces an immediate risk of seizure of assets. In New York, there's no stay of the enforcement of that judgment whatsoever, and I understand that may be the case in Texas. In California, we may have a little bit of time because of the process by which they have to register their judgment. So one of the only prudent alternatives that's available to the board is the bankruptcy option. And without saying that that's absolutely what has to happen, it's a real opportunity and a real possibility that that will have to be done. There's no guarantee at this point in time from Empire State that they will not exercise on their judgments. And absent some sort of forbearance agreement in writing, if that's the case, then this entity, Pacifica, is at risk. I don't think that that forecloses the idea that we also need to pursue the audit trail. I don't think those things are mutually exclusive, as Mr. Fernandez said. But what we face imminently is possible seizure of assets, and that could be, again, catastrophic. So one of the questions that was asked is kind of what are the pros and cons of bankruptcy, and we're trying to go through all of this. So at a 10,000-foot level, the bankruptcy would basically stop the enforcement actions by Empire State. They wouldn't be able to exercise in their judgment, and they would be basically a general unsecured creditor at that point. The bankruptcy would give the debtor the benefit of the automatic stay, which precludes anyone from trying to do anything to collect on assets of the estate. It would give you guys a little bit of a breathing spell. The current board would stay in control in a bankruptcy case, absent some other ways that the board could be displaced in the bankruptcy if things aren't going right. But typically the board and management would stay in control and would try to process and shepherd this thing towards a bankruptcy reorganization. And what that would mean in this case, and Mr. Fernandez touched on it, is our goal would be to put forth a reorganization plan in the bankruptcy case that would allow the entity Pacifica to pay its debts and hopefully pay them over time. Now, exactly what that amount of time is that's a difficult to predict at this point in time. Depends on the entirety of the creditor body. It depends on what's feasible from a standpoint of what Pacifica can do on a go-forward basis to determine how long that could be. But, you know, plans can stretch out creditors over 3, 5, 7 years. And here, one of the issues and one of the questions is, can we reduce the amount of the claims in the bankruptcy case? Well, the answer to that is, if we have valid grounds to object to claims and reasons to object to a claim and have it reduced and or disallowed, we can certainly try to reduce claims on that. And that would include the attempts to cap the Empire State's claim for damages under if we reject their lease and get out from underneath them. So there are ways to reduce it by that, and the claim objection process would help in that regard. The issue remains of whether we have to pay creditors in full, and that goes back to the question of whether this is a solvent estate on an asset basis. And my understanding, and perhaps everyone can correct me if I'm wrong, is that this is kind of an asset-rich, cash-poor kind of situation where there are a lot of assets that would potentially allow creditors to be paid in full. And that runs into problems in the bankruptcy code that we may have to pay creditors in full if they don't agree to take something less than that. We can get into the nuances of that as well. One of the other points that was, and one of the questions that was raised is, are loans possible in a bankruptcy case? And Mr. Fernandez and I, we see loans in bankruptcy cases all the time, debtor in possession financing. And it's a very common occurrence. So the fact that there's a bankruptcy does not foreclose lenders from coming in, and there's a whole area of lenders that are willing to do DIP financing. The question are, what are those terms and what can be negotiated? And would that be better in a bankruptcy? It's not absolutely clear. So at the same time, if there was a possibility for a license swap, that could also be pursued in the bankruptcy. And if that's a way to potentially put forth a reorganization plan that makes sense, then that would be something that might need to be pursued. Now, that's just generally some of the pros of bankruptcy. And, of course, there's the other side of the equation, which is what's the negatives of bankruptcy. And, first of all, it's expensive. There's no doubt about that. It requires significant attention from management. There's all kinds of reporting requirements and things that you wouldn't have to do but for the bankruptcy. And one of the big things that strikes me is there has to be, in the long run, bankruptcy may give us some delay and some time, but we need to come up with an exit strategy of how are we going to deal with the problems that Pacific is facing, not just the Empire State judgment, but we've also got operational issues that we're not doing well on a cash flow basis. So something needs to give and be corrected in the long run. If that's a license swap, if that's the best thing that needs to be done, if we can change operations, if we can raise donors and get more money put into this thing, something needs to be done to turn around operations. So without a real exit strategy, a bankruptcy just may not be successful in the long run. I don't know. I don't know the outcome of that at this point. It's just too early to tell based on the information that we have. A bankruptcy could also, as everyone knows, be disruptive to the business operations. You may have certain vendors who just say, the heck with it, we're not going to deal with these guys anymore. So there's issues there as well. There's the perception of a bankruptcy, and that may have a negative impact on donors. I don't know if that's true or not true, but I can tell you this, over the last several years, the stigma of bankruptcy is not what it once was. Bankruptcy is oftentimes an opportunity and a necessity to correct things and to restructure operations for a number of different reasons. One final point on the cons is, I guess, a bankruptcy doesn't in and of itself solve the cash flow problems. So there's probably some post-petition financing or other liquidity event that would have to happen in order for Pacifica to move forward and reorganize on a go-forward basis. So that's kind of 10,000-foot level of the pros and cons. I know you guys raised a lot of specific questions, and I guess we can delve into those, but that's kind of my initial comments at this point in time.
Thank you very much. I have Jane. Who was that?
Sabrina.
Okay, I'm still saving everything for afterwards because we have one more guest speaker. But apparently it's Mr. Green.
No, I don't intend to say anything. These guys are the experts and the specialists, and their time's limited, so give it to them.
Okay, so it was just the two. Okay, no problem. So first in the stack is Jan Goodman. I have Sabrina next. Before Sabrina goes in, is there anyone else who wishes to be on the stack to ask questions?
It was Grace that asked to be on the stack.
Alex on the stack, yeah.
Grace, did you ask to be on the stack?
No, but I'd like to be on the stack. You can put me after Alex.
Got you. Anyone else?
Mansur would like to be on stack.
You got it. Okay, that's four. Let's move on. Okay, so we have Sabrina, Alex, Grace, and Mansur. Sabrina, you have the floor.
And Jim. I just want to get off.
And Jen, I'm sorry, you're going to go at, where do you want to be after Sabrina?
I can be after Sabrina, it's okay.
Okay.
Are you sure? Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Fernandez, and thank you, Mr. Strack, for being on the call this evening. A quick question. In regards to bare bones filing, that usually takes, like, what, about a couple weeks or so to do that? I mean, because we're stretched for time, as you already know. So just want to get an idea of the timeline as far as doing bare bones filing versus doing a full filing. And do we have enough time? I think we're at 20 days at this point.
Well, this is Phil. I can jump in. We talked about this previously. To do a bare bones filing, we really just need to get some basic information. Most of the labor is done on your side of the equation, putting together a creditor list and a list of outstanding amounts that are owed and some other things as well. But a bare bones filing does not require a lot of time on our side of the equation. I think we referenced 1 to 2 weeks before would be kind of our lead time to get something done. And I know that the work on your side of the equation is probably a lot more difficult, and I know the CFO has the necessary information to prepare some of that preliminary information to do the voluntary petition.
You won't find disagreement between the two of us on anything that you've heard today. So there's a risk of piling on, but I would add the specific information we need is the entity's name, the employment ID number, the names and addresses of all creditors, and then we need a little more detail only for the 20 largest. That would be the type of debt and the amount and the contact person. But if that the 2 weeks comes from how fast we can move together, if that information can be produced electronically and is accurate, an emergency petition could be filed in 24 hours. But it's rare that you have all that information assembled, so it can take a while to put together.
Okay. But with the full filing, how long does that usually take?
Well, a case this complex, you would file, if you file an emergency petition, statutorily you have 2 weeks to file the rest of the schedules and statement of financial affairs and other initial documents, but that can be extended for cause. The way I think this case would probably proceed would be the chief pleadings that are filed first are what are called the first day motions that tell the court what the real background is, what the most pressing issues are, what kind of immediate relief we need. And they're named after the fact that they're typically filed on the first day, and you come in for a hearing on short notice, usually 72 hours. So the schedules at that point can be, I don't want to say they can be put off, but the case is already up and running, and that 2-week statutory period is often extended.
Okay. So given our complex situation, that's the last question, Mr. Chair. Given our complex situation, we need to start this immediately, correct? The full filing.
When you get three lawyers in a room, you're going to get 10 different opinions. and part of that is because none of these really have clear answers. But I think what you're getting is you're getting all counsel that are on the phone now pretty much nodding their heads. This, you know, given the judgment, takes up a lot of oxygen in the room, but also the other debt, the lack of cash flow, the lack of ability to service debt, and the amount of time it's going to take to prepare. If you don't start preparing, you will start losing options.
Okay. All right. Thank you, gentlemen.
Okay. Jen Goodman is next on the stack. Are you ready, Jen?
Yes.
So let me ask, if there is, if the Empire State Building sends a notice to the bank, and they also send a notice to us, that they are actually attaching a bank account, can the bankruptcy be filed, you know, that same day or the next day, and stop them from grabbing that money, or is it too late at that point?
Well, I think the answer to that is we're not necessarily going to know that's happening. They're going to get, and I don't know what the process is in New York exactly, but in here in California, they would get a writ of execution to levy on whatever assets. It would go to the sheriff, and the sheriff would levy on bank accounts, and we wouldn't necessarily get great notice of when that's going to happen. So we're at immediate risk that that's going to occur. I understand there's somewhat of a different process in New York, which I haven't been entirely clear on, but apparently they just go in and they do something there. But at this point, I'm not sure they're stayed from enforcing whatsoever.
I just want to be clear that in California, are you saying that they can go in, get the writ, take it to the sheriff, have the sheriff to the bank, ask an account without us knowing anything about it?
We would know about the writ, and we would get notice of that. And so we would probably have a little bit of notice there, but once that's down the road, we're going to have a hard time stopping it.
So if we got a writ, could we go in and file for the bankruptcy, call the bank, call Empire State Building and say we filed bankruptcy?
Yes. Yes, and that would immediately stop all the collection efforts.
Okay, so they couldn't actually in California attach an account. I mean, we would have time between the time they filed the writ and the time they actually took possession of our bank account. I just want to be very clear about that.
Yes.
Okay, and we would have time. We could then call you up and say, I mean, assuming that we have everything electronically ready for the first filing, we could hold off filing until we actually receive the, and at that point, pull the trigger, so to speak.
I think that's the answer in California. New York, I'm not sure what the answer is.
Okay. May I add a little, possibly a question you didn't quite ask, but related?
Okay.
There are other things that are happening that do not give you the luxury of having a day's notice. So, for example, if as we understand is the case in Texas and New York, the judgment can be recorded in the county recorder's office immediately, like yesterday or today. That at that point, a judgment lien attaches. That's a big deal because that changes the Empire State's rights vis-a-vis you and your creditors. That improves Empire State's rights. They get a lien against assets, and now if you do file a bankruptcy case, they're going to be getting statutory interest. They're going to have a higher classification. You will have at that point really given away something of significant value. And that's, you're not going to get notice of that because that's already happening. As soon as that's recorded in New York and Texas, that's that. And in California, it does take 30 days before a judgment creditor can record the abstract of judgment. But you're not going to get notice of that. It's just, if I'm representing the creditor, it's going to be on the 31st day.
Thank you. Next person on the stack is Alex Steinberg.
This is a question to Phil Strzok. Phil, would you say it's a reasonable approach to try to negotiate a loan as an alternative to filing a bankruptcy, if if we have some assurance that we will be able to negotiate the loan in time, and if we have some assurance from ESRT that they are would like the loan as a solution to their summary judgment. And you are, of course, correct that the situation is more dire than it was right after the summary judgment. There are a lot of reasons for that, but one particular reason is we had the opportunity then to immediately start working toward a loan, a bridge loan, in order to pay the summary judgment. But for various reasons, that was delayed and delayed and delayed, and now here we are. I think there may still be time in order to obtain a loan and forestall an eviction, and I would like your opinion if that were doable. Is that a reasonable procedure for us to follow? Now, I also have a second question. This one I sent in writing. We're kind of stuck here between two ways in which we could neglect our fiduciary responsibilities, and that's because the resources of the national office will either be devoted toward preparation for bankruptcy, which of course is certainly understandable if a bankruptcy is our only alternative to the seizure of assets. I don't think that's quite the case yet. But the resources of the national office will either be devoted to that, or they will be devoted to the preparations of our audits for 2016 and 2017. Now, the issue is, if we don't complete our audits for 2016-2017, we have been told by the Attorney General's office that if we don't complete those audits by March of 2018, then we will be losing our nonprofit status. So I think if we allow that to happen, I think the directors on this board would really be in violation of their fiduciary responsibilities. Of course, we would also be in violation of our fiduciary responsibilities if we allowed the seizure of assets to occur. So how do we weigh those considerations, and what would be the right decision in this case?
Thank you for that loaded question. But I think, Mr. Fernandez, and I think I touched on it just a little bit. This is Phil Strzok. I think the answer to that question is your fiduciary duties are not mutually exclusive. You have an immediate problem that you have to deal with, and you have a long-term problem of audits that need to be completed. So they have to
both. Well, it's not such a long-term problem, the audits. I mean,
I get it. I mean, it's months down the road, but you need to deal with the other one first before you can even get to that step.
Yep.
And that kind of leads me to the first question. And the key to that whole analysis is a written forbearance agreement from Empire State Building that they're going to forestall and not foreclose on assets in the immediate future. That's something that needs to be done in writing immediately. If you have that in your hand, that would give you some time potentially to negotiate loans and terms that would be acceptable. But there's a problem with that as well, in that if we're agreeing to a loan where we don't have the ability to repay, or we're just going to find ourselves in the same situation 3 months from now or 6 months from now, then maybe that's not the best way to go. If you told me today that Empire State has just signed a forbearance agreement and we can get a loan on reasonable terms that would potentially give us the breathing spell we need to address the more pressing problems of cash flow and other things, for example, a license swap, and there was a year of deferral on interest payments and something like that, then that may be something that's palatable, and that may weigh against an immediate bankruptcy filing. But that's not where we're at today. Maybe tomorrow, if we're there, that would answer the question, but that's not where we're at today.
I would only add everything Phil just said, I would agree with. I would only add the nonprofit status, if it is lost, can be regained.
But the assets, if the assets disappear, they cannot necessarily be regained. And with that dark tone, I'm going to have to sign off and say thank you all.
Thank you very much
for
your participation.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you, Mr. Fernandez.
Jan Goodman on the track, please.
Okay. I can put you back on the stack. Alex, hang on. Were Alex
Grace,
done?
I believe I'm on the stack. No?
Yep, you're right after Alex, Grace. I just want to make sure Alex is done.
I'm done for now. I might want to come back for some more questions. But let's
okay.
let other people go.
Sharon, you're next on the stack.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. First of all, I want to say that there have been a few emails saying that this meeting isn't being streamed or there's some difficulty.
I did just double check on that, and we are being streamed. If you go to the KPFTX site, I'm right here right now, and if you click on it, you can hear it streaming.
This meeting isn't being streamed or there's some difficulty.
And that's you saying that from the stream.
Okay, thank you. Just wanted to ensure that that was okay. So, Phil, there is, I put this in one of my questions, and I would hope that you would get to answer all of my questions that I put in writing to you. I believe you addressed some of them, the first six or so, but there are another 20 or 15 or so after that. And Bill Crozier also had some questions. I think the board really needs answers to all those questions before we make any decision. In particular, what would be the if we get a loan in bankruptcy, would and it's based on using a piece of real estate as collateral, is that would we be would that real estate be protected more in bankruptcy than if we get a loan before moving into bankruptcy? How would that work?
Well, what happens, Grace, and by the way, I did see all of your questions. I only commented on the ones I felt it was necessary to add to it. So I did see the entire list of questions.
Okay.
The obtaining the loan pre-bankruptcy, you're going to voluntarily agree to encumber some of your real property. I don't know the details of that. I don't know what the projected loan-to-value ratios are, et cetera. But there is the risk if we do that pre-bankruptcy and we're unable to make those payments when they come due, whatever those due dates are, then we've given that lender a secured creditor position on various pieces of real property. And they have rights in bankruptcy that may allow them to seek relief from the automatic stay, which is one of the benefits that I mentioned, to be able to go ahead and foreclose and exercise their rights with respect to the real property. That's a general summation. Whether or not they get relief from stay is a different animal, and that depends a lot on the bankruptcy case, the progress of the bankruptcy case, what the judge's perceptions of the progress that's being made towards getting something done. Generally, a relief from stay motion on real property, and I assume these lenders are not going to loan 70, 80, 90% loan to value, so there's likely an equity cushion there that would potentially defeat a motion for relief from stay in the bankruptcy case. Not guaranteed. So I guess the pre-petition loan, pre-bankruptcy loan, has the risk that we could lose that collateral if a bankruptcy is later commenced after a default. Now, if that same loan occurs during the bankruptcy case, you're still going to have terms, and hopefully those terms will be, you know, something that can be lived with. You'll also have, more than likely, a creditors committee pushing for certain terms and conditions that would also protect Pacifica, i.e., the creditor could not get immediately relief from stay to foreclose. They would have to come in and ask for relief from stay, and there may be a sale process. So the rights are maybe the same as the real property, but the post-petition loan may be better protected. You may be more in control of what happens, and you may have a longer period of time before a creditor would get relief from stay to foreclose on the real property assets.
Okay, just, you know, taking out a loan would pay off the summary judgment, theoretically, before bankruptcy, making bankruptcy unnecessary at this time and giving Pacifica at least 6 months to a year breathing space to work out our problems without bankruptcy imminent, because there is no other creditor. Even if a creditor wanted to be paid more quickly, they'd have to go through the lengthy process of getting a summary judgment. So why would it be beneficial to go into bankruptcy at this point when we can forestall the seizure of assets by simply paying off a summary judgment?
Well, that begs the question of, one, is Empire State going to agree to forbear? And two, is the loan going to happen in the near future to where the assets aren't in jeopardy? It's a chicken and egg kind of problem right now. Is the assets right now are in jeopardy in New York and perhaps Texas as well, and California would be shortly. So I get it, and as I mentioned, I believe it was Alex before, that if I knew that there was a forbearance agreement with Empire State in place, and that you guys have some time to work on the terms of a loan that would give you the ability to service that loan on a going-forward basis, if there was some sort of year deferral interest payments or a reserve or something like that that would give you the kind of time to put together a more significant way to deal with your problems, then that may not be the worst thing in the world, and that may forestall the bankruptcy. But, again, that's just not where we're at right now.
Well, it is where we're at right now, because there are loans available that could be obtained very rapidly and could be used to forestall bankruptcy, I believe. I'm not 100% certain about that, but I'm 90% certain of that option being available to us. So given that theoretical option, what do you say to that? We don't have to wait for...
Again, I go back to if Empire State has agreed to forbear, which is the immediate problem, then a loan may make sense if it's something that can be serviced and if it's out there. I mean, we talked about this months ago as being a possibility, and unfortunately now we're in a worse situation than we were then. But you know, so it can happen. But is it going to happen before assets are seized? I don't know. All we have right now is kind of a indication from the Empire State that they're not going to do anything. I don't know if you can hang your hat on that.
Yeah. Okay. Jan Ackman, back.
Okay. Hold on. Next on the stack, we have Mansoor and then Jen Goodman, and then I'm going to put myself on the stack after Jan, because I forgot to tell you I wanted to be before Jan. And so if Grace is done, we'll move on to Mansoor. Grace, you done?
Can you hear me, Jonathan? Can you
I
hear
just
me?
Have one other
hold
other
on, I hear someone.
Oh, okay.
I have one other quick piece of information. The
okay.
Information
that,
according
to... Miskilla Washington, was that you?
Excuse me. Jonathan, can you hear me? This is Miskilla.
Yes, Maskila, I can barely hear you. It's a little difficult, but I hear you now. Do you want to be on the stack?
She was on the stack. She was on the stack after I.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear that. There still is a little bit something with your phone, maybe it's low or something. I can turn you up if you ask.
Sure.
But no problem. I can put it on right there. Hang on. I'm just writing it in. And so, Grace, you can finish up. And then next was Maskila, Mansoor, then Maskila.
Okay, I'll let the other people in the stack speak.
Okay, we have plenty of time on this item. I have roughly 49 minutes. Milwaukee's time is more accurate. Okay, next speaker.
Sure, thank you. Thank to both lawyers. I have one question, and I would like you to address our members. Many of our members have told us that they would sue the PNB members for if we go for bankruptcy. And as our fiduciary duty tells us that we have to make the best decisions to save Pacifica, would you please address your answers to our members? What is their legal rights if and when we claim a bankruptcy? Thank you.
I don't know if I can answer that question. I don't represent the members per se. I'm here to give advice to Pacifica. I can say that the members, I haven't even evaluated whether they are creditors in the bankruptcy estate and if they have rights. I think the judge would give credence to their comments. I don't know how extensively, and that's something that I am not even prepared to address tonight. I apologize for that.
Okay. Next, we're going to go to Maskila, Washington. Maskila, can you hear me?
Here we go.
Maskila, Washington, are you there? Okay, maybe she's having a phone problem. We'll come right back to her.
Here, I'm here.
Jan Goodman is next.
She's there.
Are you there, Maskila?
I am.
Oh, thank you. Okay, you have the floor.
Okay. I apologize for getting on the call late. I did not get the telephone number and had to look for the old number anyway. First off, I need to know, is there a quorum for this meeting?
Yes, ma'am.
Is there a quorum? Period.
I can tell you how many people we have on right now if you wish.
16 people.
How many people on this call?
16 people.
16.
Okay. This is an open meeting, right?
Yes, ma'am, and it is being streamed.
Oh, yeah, and this is very unfortunate. This conversation with the attorneys is happening in public, and I really, really do believe it could hurt our loan application. I really do. I people are listening, and I don't know whether or not someone is going to seriously consider giving us a loan when we're talking to attorneys, bankruptcy attorneys. It shows a certain amount of failure, really, on the board in not proceeding as quickly as possible with a loan. And if you want to talk with a bankruptcy attorney, you do it in closed session, as I thought some people had agreed to do. There's always this kind of backstabbing that happens in Pacifica. It's just incredible. Incredible. I think some people really want us to fail, and it's unfortunate.
Okay. Did you have any further questions for Mr. Strzok?
None.
All right. Thank you very much. It appears the next person on the stack is, again, Jan Goodman, and I have no one after her.
Adriana.
Okay, Adriana, I'm going to put you on the stack. You're going to be on the stack after me, Adriana. And I have a brief question. And next is Jan.
So if we have a loan that actually will pay off the Empire State Building so they don't have to agree to a forbearance, it just pays them off, then my question is, one, and we have enough money to make payments for a certain amount of time, and then we have a better loan that will give us a year's worth of of not having to pay anything for a year. But if we're in that situation, would you recommend, and the interest, even at a high rate of interest, would be less than the cost of say, $150,000, which might be the cost of retaining a bankruptcy lawyer. Which option do you think makes sense? If we have enough money, if we're able to borrow enough money to essentially give us breathing room for a year, would, and then we could move forward so we didn't have to worry about ESRT. Granted, we have millions more of debt that we have to deal with. No question about that. But we don't have judgments breathing down our neck. And we would then have the ability to reorganize ourselves without the bankruptcy court, because we still have to find the cash flow to make us work. Which, can you just comment about the advisability of going, you know, going into bankruptcy or taking out the loan, paying off ESRT, so we don't have to worry about whether they forbear or not forbear, because they don't seem to be inclined in that direction, and then go forward with reorganizing ourselves, having a year to do so with a loan that we would have that gives us that luxury.
Right, I understand. This is Phil, and I appreciate that. And I for one, bankruptcy is a drastic option. There's no doubt about that. And the question is, from a business standpoint, is it better to kick the can down the road and get rid? If you told me today that the judgment creditor was paid, you have a loan that was acceptable to the board, bought you guys the necessary time to do what it is you need to do to correct operations and or deal with the long-term cash flow issues, then I would say that's a better result than immediately filing a bankruptcy.
Thank you.
But I go back to the same, that we're dealing with a hypothetical, and you know, we're we're not there today.
Actually, do have loans that are very close to that position. I mean, extremely close. Like, could be a week. So, thank you very much.
Oh. What?
Okay. What? Mr. Strzok, were you going to respond to that? Otherwise, I'm going to go to the next person on the stack.
I'm not sure why I was there, if there was anything left to respond to there.
Okay, just...